Is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 12, 2022, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my hotel in Bristol, Connecticut. I'm doing shows here, Baseball Tonight's, during this week of the Division Series. Taylor Schwenk is working from his home studio, the Schwenk Studios in the foothills of Connecticut. And Sarah Abbott is working from the Sarah Abbott Studios on her birthday. Happy birthday, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy and so excited, and it's going to be a good day.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we got to get more from you later about what your birthday plans are. This is the birthday for my brother as well, my brother Sam, who's I asked him today, what is he doing? He's a logger. He said, I'm removing trees from their earthly bounds. That's what he's doing. And it's also the birthday for my dog, Ruby's the best dog I've ever had. She turns 12 today. All right. Yesterday, the first day of the division series across the American League, National League landscape. And clearly the game of the day happened in Houston. Justin Verlander started for the Astros, who come into this series as big favorites because of all their experience. And early on, Justin Verlander got dinged up by the youngest player on the field.
Verlander's 1-2 on the way. Swung on a line shot to the alley in right center. Way out there on the grass, up against the fence. One run is in, Frazier scores. Kelnick is in to score, and it is 3-0 Seattle. Rodriguez, the sublime rookie, with a bullet into right center field. It got to the wall on one bounce. 3-0 Seattle.
Yordan Alvarez helped the Astros come back in the bottom of the third.
The pitch. Swing and a high fly ball into left center field. Backing up is Kelnick. They're both looking up, and it's going to be off the wall. Off the Crawford boxes. One run in. Here comes Altuve. He will score without a throw to the plate. And that'll be a double for Alvarez. And that tightens up the ball game and makes it 4-2.
That sound from ESPN Radio. J.P. Crawford added to the Mariners' lead in the top of the fourth.
Verlander rocks, he pitches, swinging a high fly ball deep to right field. That's way down the line. Watch this baby go. That is gone. A monster shot by the number 9 hitter, Crawford.
Seattle extended their lead in the top of the seventh inning.
One pitch to Suarez, swinging that one, driven into left field, back toward the wall, and that ball is gone. Suarez with a blast. And he's had himself a really fine day. That's the second home run of the afternoon for Seattle. Eugenio Suarez, with 31 in season, gets a hold of one, and that was out of here in a hurry into the Crawford boxes to make it 7-3 Seattle.
Now, the Astros, as you knew they would, started to come back in the bottom of the eighth inning with help from Alex Bregman.
Swinging a high fly ball left field. That's deep. Kelnick back, turning around, looking up, and that ball is gone. Home run. Bregman strikes. And a Houston Astros right back in the game. A two-run shot to make it 7-5 Seattle.
In the ninth inning, the Astros rally. Two outs and two on. And Mariners manager Scott Servais brought in left-hander Robbie Ray, who, of course, normally works as a starter, to work to left-handed slugger Yordan Alvarez. This is what happened.
Here's the pitch. Swing, and there's a drive. Sucked to right. Back it goes, and that's a walk-off shot. A walk-off shot. Yordan Alvarez has done it with a three-run blast in the bottom of the ninth. And Houston pulls it out 8-7. Holy cow!
Now, it's very interesting, this decision by Servais, because when you look at the numbers, there's actually a statistical argument. He should have left his closer in the game. Here's Scott Servais talking about the tough loss.
Yeah, it's a tough one. There's no question about it. I thought we played a very good ball game today. We did a lot of great things offensively. Certainly we got on Verlander early in the game and did exactly what we needed to do there. But as I talked early about it and our team about it, it's like a heavyweight fight. You know, you're going to get punched. It's how you respond in those moments, and that's a tough one. And today I thought we had it in hand. You got to give them credit. Certainly they've been in this spot many times before, and you don't quit, but they got some huge hits late in the game against some of our better guys. So we will respond. these things happen throughout the course of the year. And we talked about it coming into the playoffs. You are going to have games. You're going to have moments where it doesn't go your way. And, you know, we will respond accordingly tomorrow. We'll get after it again.
Dusty Baker has a ton of experience in big games. He was asked about, where does this rank among games you've witnessed?
Boy, that's so close to the top. I don't know what the top is, but that's very, very close to it. And that's, boy, I mean, the baseball world, you know, had to be excited. I know the town is excited. Our team's excited. You know, if you're not a baseball fan, after watching that, there's a good chance you'll tune in tomorrow or Thursday.
Here's Alex Bregman talking about Alvarez's home run.
I just went nuts. I lost my voice, honestly, out there. I was screaming. I wanted to go give him a hug, like, right after he hit it, but he still had to go run the bases, so just waiting for him. The team was fired up. The place was on fire tonight. The fans were unbelievable. It was so awesome to have a packed house here. The energy was flowing. We felt it. We felt them.
Now, in Atlanta, earlier in the day, the Braves playing host to the Phillies. Max Fried was not good. He looked sluggish. Remember, he came out of his previous start being sick in the middle of the game. And the Phillies yesterday took advantage of that.
And that ball is ripped. Dansby Swanson cannot get it. Into left field it goes. Sosa's in. Hoskins is in. And another huge hit. Castellanos, third of the day. He picks up two more RBIs. Philadelphia 6, Atlanta 1.
That was Carl Ravitch on ESPN Radio. Castellanos was only getting started. The score was 7-3, ninth inning. Matt Olson drew the Braves close.
Looks over at first where Swanson's got a lead. Acuna is in his eyesight halfway down the third baseline. And Olson sends one high and deep to center field. That sends Marsh back all the way to the wall. It's a three-run home run. And Matt Olson has pulled the Braves within one. It's 7-6.
The next batter came to the plate, and this is what happened on a little flare to right field.
Here comes the pitch, and he swings and sends it to right field. Getting a late jump on it, Castellanos. He dives. Oh, what a catch by Castellanos.
Here was the final call.
Dardo, last chance. And on the ground, shortstop over to make the play. Sosa to first, got him. Wow. The Philadelphia Phillies and Zach Eflin survive thanks in large part to an amazing catch in right field by Nick Castellanos. And the Phillies win game one.
Phillies manager Rob Thompson described Castellanos' performance.
Outstanding. Swung the bat really well, had some big hits. Made a great play in the ninth on that sliding catch to, you know, get the second out of the ninth. So, yeah, I hope that's the start of something because he's been out for a long time and maybe he's really getting his timing back now. It's a big moment, you know, in this series, first game of this series. To win this game is huge for us. So, you know, he's had some big moments. He hit a home run here earlier in the season that won a game for us, but. That was a great game for him.
Here's Nick Castellanos.
After you made your catch, you laid on your back and you looked up at the sky. It looked like you were happy, you were relieved. I mean, what was going through your mind after the catch?
I mean, all the above. Just kind of looking, was like, thank God I caught that ball. you know, just they obviously had a big point in the game right there with, you know, putting them within one. So to be able to catch that and have two outs and nobody on base, I mean, was huge.
Braves manager Brian Snitker talked about not being able to capitalize against Ranger Suarez with runners on base early in the game.
You know, we had him on the ropes. I mean, he was struggling too, and we just couldn't get a big hit. I mean, we had the deck stacked in our favor three times against him, and just we couldn't, you know, they got big hits and we didn't.
Snitker was asked about checking with Max Fried, given his physical issues.
I just want to make sure he's okay. I don't want anything, you know, with his arm or anything like that. And I think it's just, I just don't know if there's anything in the tinderbox in there firing a little bit, you know. It's probably time off, sickness, whatever. So, you know, we really, through that part of the lineup, we're just trying to get him through one more, really. And, you know, in the past, he's been able to do that. But it just wasn't working for him today.
A former Los Angeles Angels employee was sentenced to 22 years in federal prison Tuesday for providing Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs the drugs that led to his overdose death in Texas. Eric Kay, dressed in an orange jumpsuit with handcuffs and leg shackles, didn't react when the judge read his sentence. Kay faced at least 20 years in prison on one of the two counts. One other note, Pete Petila was hired as the new general manager for the San Francisco Giants. He replaces Scott Harris, who has moved on to the Detroit Tigers. And by the way, today we're going to be talking with Tigers manager A.J. Hinch, who's going to give us his view of the decision by Scott Servais. Last night in the Bronx, the Yankees and the Guardians, a lot of pressure on Gerrit Cole going into this game to perform like an ace. And in the top of the third inning, the Guardians took the lead.
The 2-0s hit to right and hit well. Judge is back, and Stephen Kwan has hit it out about five rows back into the seat in right's field, and the Cleveland Guardians have taken a 1-0 lead here in the third.
That from Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio. The Yankees tied the score in the bottom of the third.
3-2 is swung on and lined to deep left. Kwan back, and it is gone. Harrison Bader lines one into the seats in left, and the Yankees have tied it at one.
In the fifth inning, there was this crazy play with Josh Donaldson misreading whether or not his ball had gone into the stands. Give a listen.
As the 1-0 to Donaldson's hit pretty well toward the right field corner. Gonzalez back, and it is off the top of the wall and is called in play. And Donaldson is hung up between first and second and tagged out, diving back to first. And Donaldson is protesting that the ball left the ballpark. But if he is wrong, he is out.
Gerrit Cole was dominant after that early struggles. This was Gerrit Cole in the eighth inning.
Two balls, two strikes, the count. And the pitch is swing and a miss. He got him. And Jose Trevino, the catcher, is fired up as he pumps his fist after that strikeout. Number eight on the night for Cole.
Anthony Rizzo extended the Yankees' lead in the bottom of the sixth.
And the 3-2 to Rizzo is swinging a high fly ball to right. Hit pretty well. Gonzalez is back at the wall. It is gone.
And then after that, the Yankees bullpen was terrific. 2 2/3 scoreless innings leading to this final call.
And the 2-1 on the way, and a swing and a ball in the air to right center. Playable for Harrison Bader, and the Yankees will win it. Holmes gets it done. Cole with a very nice outing. Home runs for Bader and Rizzo tonight. And the Yankees take game one of the series by a score of 4-1.
After the game, Guardians manager Terry Francona was asked about Gerrit Cole.
I thought we did a really good job early, you know, driving this pitch count up. And then he had a real quick fourth inning that kind of got him back into the game where he was able to actually go out for the seventh. We had a real good opportunity, you know, had bases loaded and didn't cash in. So that doesn't help, but he's got pretty good stuff. I mean, you watch the game, he's got velocity, he spins the ball. Pretty tough to get a beat on.
Francona was asked about the Yankees' defense.
Well, that's part of why they're better than they were before. I hope it doesn't lead to a win next game. That's, you know, they're a much better defensive team. That's for sure. That's stating the obvious.
Aaron Boone talked about Cole's performance.
I thought he did a really good job of you know, kind of owning the moment, being unpredictable, and I thought his breaking ball was really, really on point tonight. But and then the few times, you know, he was backed into a corner, he made some pitches.
Here's Gerrit Cole talking about being able to get out of a third inning jam with the bases loaded.
Thought we played good defense, picked each other up, and made good pitches, ultimately, for the most part, throughout the inning.
Anthony Rizzo talked about the Yankees' defense.
We have been really good defensively. I think that's credit to all of us putting the work in, our coaches putting us in good positions and getting us the work when we need it and backing off when they know we don't. And it's what's going to take us to the promised land is pitching and defense.
And finally, the last game of the day, the Dodgers and the Padres in Los Angeles. And the Dodgers jumped all over San Diego and starting pitcher Mike Clevinger.
The pitch.
Swing and a ground ball to the right side. Knocking it down is Myers. Everybody's going to be safe. Muncy in to score. It was just put in the perfect spot, and then Myers didn't field it cleanly. Probably will be an E3. We'll see. It's 5-0 Dodgers.
The Padres fought back in the top of the fifth with help from Will Myers.
1-1, breaking ball, hit in the air, left field, pretty well struck. Left field, going back is Thompson at the wall, and that one is gone. And Will Myers will circle the bases, a solo homer that just got over the left field wall. And it makes it a 5-1 game.
But this is where we landed. We've talked about how the Dodgers have this unusual bullpen situation. Craig Kimbrell is not even on the roster for this round. And so the guy looking to get the save in the top of the ninth inning, Chris Martin, 9 career saves, 2 this year. And here was the final call.
Swing and a high fly ball left field, playable for Trace Thompson, who comes in, settles under it, and he's got it. And that's a ball game. Dodgers win it. 5-3 the final in game one.
Here's Dodgers shortstop Trey Turner talking about how he felt after having those days off.
You know, I feel good. I feel like this year my body's felt, as good as it has in a long time. Last few years and years past, you play banged up, but this year's been pretty good. So I felt pretty good body-wise. But, yeah, having a few days off, I think, like I told you, mentally and physically just helps a little bit and help you hit the reset button real quick and then get right back to it. So, yeah, I feel good.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts talked about setting a tone in the first inning against Clevinger.
I thought our plan against Clevinger was really good. Hunting balls in the strike zone. I thought Trey did a fantastic job tonight of not chasing and getting him in the strike zone. And, when he got him in the strike zone, he put some really good swings together. I thought Will Smith did a really nice job tonight. And I thought Max took great at-bats. And so I thought we had a great plan versus Clev.
Sarah, what else you got?
As excited as we all are about October baseball, be sure to check out our full slate of NFL shows, including the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the Adam Schefter podcast, the Dominique Foxworth Show, and Kyle Brandt's Basement. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing this morning after getting no sleep? Because I know you're up watching our baseball tonight at 2 in the morning.
As producer Greg Colley knows, I watch every show. I was watching you and Zubin last night. Loved it. But I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm still recovering. I was thinking about this, and I told this story again last night on air. When the Giants were going through their championship run, I remember walking up to Bruce Bochy, who I've known forever, and played in, and I've told you, rec league basketball with him. And I walked up to Boch, and I said, "Hey, Boch, I'm trying to figure out, based on the reaction that you get from game to game, are you a complete idiot or are you a genius? Because it kind of changes from day to day based on the results, right? That's the nature of managing in the postseason. Everything you do is scrutinized. I must say, the more that I thought about it after the game last night, after the Mariners game, and looking at the numbers, I don't understand why Scott Servais brought in Robbie Ray to pitch in place of Paul Sewald, because as we ran through the numbers on Baseball Tonight last night, yes, Robbie Ray is more effective against left-handed hitters. He's someone who, has obviously had a lot of success. But Sewald's numbers against lefties are actually better than Robbie Ray's, and he's the closer. So I'm a little bit confused. What'd you think of that move?
You know, I felt like a classic postseason move. We see these things happen where a star pitcher is put in a situation that he's not usually in, and that always stresses me out. We've seen Max Scherzer get the save. We've seen Clayton Kershaw get the save in those key moments, but it is such a pressure-packed moment. And for a guy who had pitched only four times in his regular season career in Robbie Ray, and none since he became Cy Young Robbie Ray, I just was not sure in the moment. It sort of felt like the type of thing, and Scott Servais said this after the game, felt like the type of thing they discussed 3 days ago. Hey, yep. If there's a big spot where Yordan is coming up, we're going to go to Robbie Ray. But I think given the situation with two guys on, everything that happened in the inning so far, it might not have been the right move. If it was nobody on, down by one, different kind of scenario, maybe it does work out. But it really did feel like they had said, okay, we're going to do this. And then situation, irregardless, they just went to it.
Yeah, it reminded me, and I know you're going to remember this, in 2016 in the World Series, Game 7, Joe Maddon starts Kyle Hendricks, and they had talked before the game that they were going to bring John Lester in relief. And at the moment, which you think, okay, John Lester's a big game pitcher, left-hander, experienced. Yeah, that's a good move. And then you watch Kyle Hendricks throwing, and when they brought in Lester, you're like, no, now's not the time. You know, it felt like one of those moves. I completely agree with you. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is two.
So speaking of that home run and that move, Yordan Alvarez's walk-off home run came with the Astros, as I alluded to, trailing by two runs. That was the first walk-off home run in postseason history with the player's team trailing by multiple runs. And it was just the fourth ever while trailing at all. The others were 1993 World Series Game 6, Joe Carter, 1988 World Series Game 1, Kirk Gibson, and Lenny Dykstra in 1986 in the NLCS. But the only other one to be down to the player's team's final out, so trailing and with two outs, was Kirk Gibson. So it was really an amazing moment. And, you know, to the point with the move, I think everyone I was working with last night, my father who texted me, everyone sort of said, I called it. And you really had that feeling during the pitching change that you knew exactly what Yordan Alvarez was going to do. And that might have been true with any pitcher, honestly, to give Scott Servais a bit of a break there. I mean, this is what Yordan does in a moment like that. But, I mean, he crushed the ball. It was a really, really cool moment to see, unless you were rooting for the Mariners.
Number two
is 71%. So we're through game one in the division series and all of them. So good time to update sort of the history of what happens in a best of five series. So in the history of best of five series in the postseason, game one winners have gone on to win that series 102 of 144 times. So that's 71%. So just a little bit better than two-thirds of the time. Of course, we've seen these series go five. We've seen the game one winner not go on to win the series, but it certainly feels like, at least for a few of the teams, maybe all of them, those were very decisive wins where it feels like this series could go their way pretty quickly.
Number one
is three. So Nick Castellanos, we definitely have to talk about him. And the first thing we're going to say about him is that he had three hits in the first four innings of that game yesterday. He became the second player in Phillies postseason history to have three hits in the first four innings of the game. And I have to say this because the other guy was Brett Myers, a pitcher in NLCS Game 2 in 2008. He saw Chad Billingsley really well, and I believe reliever for the third hit. This was one of the stats where I always make sure I'm right before I share it. But this was probably my first ever time checking it about five times before tweeting it out to make sure, is that really Brett Myers? Did I do something wrong here? And, you know, what a really cool redemption story for Nick Castellanos. It's only game one of the series, but making that catch, 55% catch probability in the ninth in that sketchy situation for the Phillies. We know he's not a great defender. We've talked about how the team does not defend well, especially in the outfield. For him to have that moment and carry the offense, I mean, this is why baseball is so amazing, especially in October, because players like him, Trent Grisham in the wild card series, can have those redeeming moments.
I love after the game when he was doing his post game interview. He's very serious generally. That's his, you know, the other teammates will tell you that he's very serious. And he basically says in a monotone, I love baseball. Like, I love baseball. He was great. Sarah, before you go, I got something for you. Give a listen.
Hi, Sarah. Bruce Bochy here. I just want you to know I've been thinking about you. And when I think about you, I think about those spring training games in Scottsdale where this young lady showed up screaming from her heart for her favorite Giant players like Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford. And it didn't matter what the score was, she was still yelling with passion. So I had to turn around to see who this young lady was. And that's where I met you and your mom. And then, of course, it wasn't but a few years later, I'm watching MLB channel, and there you are talking baseball. I was so proud of you. Sarah, I'm sending love your way. My best to you. I think the world of you.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Buster.
Well, what do you remember about that?
Oh, my gosh. So the day that I first talked to Bruce Bochy, it was a spring training game. It was 2014, and it was Tim Lincecum against the late Yordano Ventura. Of course, those two teams would go on to face each other in the World Series later that year. Obviously, the Royals and the Giants. And Lincecum went out there and gave up a handful of runs. And I want to say the Giants were trailing by like five or six runs. And they ended up coming back. And, you know, I'm at the game. I'm a fan. I'm screaming. And at some point, I should say, we were sitting in seats that were not ours. So my mom and I at Scottsdale Stadium, we're now outing ourselves to the ushers, would always go and sit in the first row, not right behind the plate, but a little bit to the right next to the dugout. And, you know, in spring training, the managers often sit on the field. So we would go there just to have a great seat. And when the people came, we moved. That game, nobody came. So we sat there the whole game, and I'm screaming my lungs out at a spring training game. And eventually, Boach turns around and says, hey, you know, how you doing? What's your name? Starts shouting. And, you know, we came back. We were there the next day, and that's sort of where we got to know each other. And that, you know, I mentioned my name. And later that month, we went to a game in San Francisco. They used to play the A's, or they still do, for the final few spring training games in San Francisco and Oakland. And we went to one of those games, and I was hanging out by the dugout just before the game. And Boach saw me and goes, hey, Sarah, how you doing? And I was blown away that he remembered my name, remembered me. And from that moment, every year at spring training, when he was there, he remembered us, came over and chatted, how's your mom? How's your grandma? And then, of course, you know, he had asked, was I in school, all these things. So when I started working at ESPN, I said, yeah, I'm graduating. I'm about to go work at ESPN. And I guess that was how I got to know World Series winning and Hall of Fame soon to be manager. So thank you so much for calling him and getting that. That's incredible.
Well, he's awesome. And so are you, Sarah. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
AJ Hinch is the manager of the Detroit Tigers, and previously, of course, he was manager of the Astros when they won the World Series in 2017. AJ, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm a little jealous of all the playoff action and not being a part of it, but I'm watching intently.
Well, it's funny. I had a conversation with Alex Cora yesterday here about that, and you and I both know people in the game who, if their team is eliminated, they won't watch. What about you? You'll watch even if you guys are not involved.
I'm locked in as much as I can. I mean, I'm a baseball junkie. Obviously, you know, the offseason has started and we've got a lot of things going on in Detroit, but I love the game. I love the pressure of these decisions. You know, I look, now that I've experienced playoff baseball as a manager, I look at the whole game a little bit differently and kind of empathize a little bit with the agony of some of these decisions. And you know, it's the most exciting time in our sport. So I don't want to pout on my couch and not watch the game. I want to see what's going on at the sport, because somebody's going to experience the joy of what October can bring, and it's fun to be a part of from a distance.
So it was back in 2014 when Bruce Bochy was managing the Giants, and I've known for a long time, and I walked up to him during that World Series and said, "Bochy, I'm having a hard time keeping track. Are you a complete idiot or are you a total genius today?" because it felt like, especially in the World Series, when the media, you know, that you might have a lot of baseball writers, but for many of them, they're dropping in on teams for the first time. And we're all, you know, paid to give opinions about decisions that you make, managers make during the course of the year. And it feels like it's all one way or all the other. Tell me what it's like to manage under those conditions.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's high pressure situation, and you're never more scrutinized about a fourth inning decision than October. And it's true. I mean, the process of arriving at that decision is far before the actual moment that it happens, all the preparation that goes in. You know your players better than anybody in the industry. And so it's hard to to be judged solely by the results when you know your process is sound. The game is won and lost by the players. The managers are paid to put themselves in the best position they can. And when it works, it's great. When it doesn't, it's miserable. And I can, you know, from my experience in 2017, I used a lot of starting pitchers as relievers. I started being a little bit more creative and trying to get to the 27th out, and it worked. And then, so everybody thought that I loved taking the starter out early. And then in 2019 in the World Series, you know, I left the starters in a little bit later into the games. I go to the bullpen and a game got away in game seven, and Will Harris gives up the homer to Howie Kendrick and the Nationals win the World Series. And then I was an idiot for not leaving the starter into the eighth and ninth inning. So I've seen it at both levels. We realize that the results are what we're going to be judged by, but inside the game and kind of behind the curtain, you know, all of us know the energy and time we put into trying to be perfect and try to lead us to the promised land.
Is it hard to not take it personally? You know, I was thinking about Scott Service Day. He's had a lifetime in baseball, and today, right, you know, as I was saying to Boach, you know, he's the guy everyone's criticized and say, how could you, right, possibly do that with Robbie Ray? Right. Is it hard to sort of set that aside, AJ, or not? No.
A little bit, only that, except you shouldn't listen to it and you shouldn't read about it. I mean, I worry more about my family reading it or my best friends reading it and listening to it and being impacted by it. I mean, it's what we sign up for. It's part of the job. But yeah, I mean, no one's trying to make a decision that doesn't work. And it's hard knowing Robbie Ray comes in and punches out Yordan Alvarez. Scott Service is high five and big hug. They have a one game lead. And instead it's a fastball down the middle and it gets out of the ballpark and the worst case scenario happens. And you feel like, you know, you can't walk out of your hotel room with any pride. So it's a tough existence. It's what we sign up for, though.
Yeah. So tell me where you landed on that whole question of and how you feel now about the whole question of using starters as relievers. You're not going to put these guys in the situation unless, right, you have faith in them. They obviously, someone like Robbie Ray has a ton of success. And on the other hand, they're in a role that they're not accustomed to doing coming out of the bullpen. So where did you land on it?
Yeah, so I don't know the players and the makeup and their preparation or what they need for their throwing. And I'm sure, I mean, knowing Scott Service, he's going to have communicated effectively and let Robbie Ray know that going into that series, if he's going to be used as a reliever, it's probably going to center around Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez. So that wasn't going to be a surprise for Robbie Ray. He was throwing, I saw they were shown on TV that he was throwing in the seventh or eighth inning. So he had a ton of time for himself to get himself physically ready. But it's tough. I believe in using your best pitchers. I don't think you have to follow the exact script for 162. You could see, you know, guys are going to get extended further. I mean, bringing in Edwin Diaz the other day with the Mets was in the seventh inning, and I was like, is he going to throw 55 pitches in three innings? And he probably would have if they hadn't scored all those runs. And so I think that the playoffs are should be judged completely differently on how you use your players. But you know your players best and what they can and can't handle. Not every starter can handle the ambush, relief outing. I did it with Justin Verlander in a division series. And the reason I did is I was not afraid of the home run. And he comes in and gives up a home run to Andrew Benintendi in his only relief outing, I think, of his career. So best laid plans do not always work out. You have to know your players best. You have to communicate with them. But I landed in it like he thought that was the best matchup and something had led to him. Execution was the reason why it didn't work out. It's hard for me as a manager to think that I was the sole reason that we lost the game, but you're responsible for your decisions. I'm sure Serve had set everybody up for success and Yordan beat him. And so at the end of the day, he better start focusing on game two and not dwell on game one much longer.
So I had a conversation during the summer with Alex Cintrone, who you know, great hitting coach. He said to me in June, he thinks that Alvarez is becoming the best pure hitter in baseball because of the power and the ability, the average ability, and his understanding of the strike zone and the way his mechanics have evolved. Tell me what you're seeing in him.
Yeah, so I think Yordan has always wowed people with the distance of his homers. You know, he's gone opposite field. He's hit it up there by the gas tank at Minute Maid. You know, I've seen him clear batting eyes in center field. Like, he'll hit majestic homers that, and given his size and his powerful swing, everybody will go right to the power as if he's this slugging monster of a hitter that produces power. And then you kind of watch his at-bats function and you see how good of a hitter he is. And so I would agree with Alex. He's in the top tier of both, of power and the ability to control the strike zone and swing at strikes. There's still a swing and miss in there occasionally. There's still, you know, he will almost stubbornly stay with his plan on what he's looking for. And he'll take pitches, which can be seen as an advantage or a disadvantage. But as far as one of the most feared hitters in the game for getting a hit or driving runs in and hitting the ball out of the ballpark, he's on a very, very short list with the biggest names in the sport, whether it's Mike Trout or Aaron Judge or Mookie Betts. It's a short list of guys that do everything, and he's one of them.
Gerrit Cole, to me, came into this postseason probably with as much or more pressure than anybody because of the fact that he had struggled, or it felt like in pressure moments, the wild card game last year. And so he goes out last night, 6 1/3 innings.
Works through a couple of early jams. Tell me what you're seeing in Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, so Gerrit is an incredible preparer for every game and holds himself to such a high bar. I mean, one of the things that I think is a great characteristic and a challenge for him is his pursuit of perfection. And I don't mean a perfect game. I don't mean a no-hitter. He just holds himself to a high bar of pitch execution to where he's emotionally attached to whether he does it or doesn't. I think it also impacts, how he responds to umpires. I've watched him over the last year or so be a little bit more aggressive with umpires, especially when you execute a pitch. He did it last night, landed a curveball inside the zone. It didn't get called. And his reaction was pretty aggressive. Gary, his reaction was pretty aggressive. So I think he holds the burden of being the Yankee ace very much close to his heart. He wants to establish himself as, one of the great pitchers of this generation. And, I think sometimes he has to be challenged not to have to be perfect. I mean, his stuff is good enough, even with misexecution. The homers that he's been giving up this year, I know eats at him just by his reactions. I haven't spent time with him this year, obviously. But I think him bouncing back after last night watching Rizzo throw the ball home and them not executing out and then coming back and getting – a big ground ball to third base, Donaldson gets the force out, and then he goes and he punches out the next guy and gets out of that inning in keeping them at one run. I think it was that inning. That's a huge step in the right direction for Gerrit Cole, who expects himself to throw a shutout and pitch as many innings as possible any given night.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of John Lester, you're right, with the intensive reaction to umpires. And it was, I think it was David Ross to basically say, look, John, let's go. Let's get back on track here.
To me, I was going to say Gerrit puts so much time and energy into his decision on what pitch he's going to throw, his delivery being perfect and executing the pitch. He's like, how can you not focus to the same level that I'm focusing and make the right call? Like that, I think John Lester was that way. I think a lot of great pitchers have that edge to them. When they put all their time and energy into that, executing that pitch, they expect the umpire to be perfect too.
Yeah, I covered Roger Clemens. I thought he put a lot of pressure on himself in the postseason, to the point that you didn't know which way it was going to tip for him. And it took him, 6-7 years to, I think, work through that and get more comfortable in those big games. I find it interesting that the Yankees 99 wins, the Dodgers 111 wins, enter the postseason with so much uncertainty about what the bullpen roles are going to be. Chris Martin closes for the Dodgers last night with 385 fewer saves than Craig Kimbrell, who wasn't put on the roster. But that's kind of where we are in 2022, right? Like the roles are out the window. The old-fashioned slotting of bullpens, that seems to be out the window. And you guys as managers now are just focused on the best matchups.
Yeah, that's changed. From my beginning, I haven't been managing forever, but enough to where I've seen the game go from the guy getting the last out. It can be anybody, any given time, despite if you have a guy that has 30 or 40. We saw it the other day with Diaz, comes in the seventh inning. And yes, they took him out with a bigger lead, but still hard to not have him be the guy that gets the last three outs. He's done it the entire year and done it at an elite level. I think that the value of the matchups and giving yourself the best chance to get to the end, if we can condition our guys. Now, you see a lot of people doing that during the season a little bit more and more. I know I do it a little bit. Alex Cora's done it a little bit. Booney even did it a little bit in New York this year when the back end of his bullpen was inconsistent. And if you can actually do it for the majority of the season, it makes it less shocking in the playoffs. The bigger question, as you referenced with the Dodgers or some teams that are so used to having one person finish it and no experience in other ways, it can be a little bit uncomfortable. Now, I will tell you, the players will buy in during the playoffs significantly more than they generally like during the season. And that's because it is win at all costs in the playoffs. And everybody has that mentality and everybody has that focus. And it does make it easier for managers if the players buy in and if you can communicate effectively on what matchups you're trying to exploit. I mean, whether it's this right-handed guy on this right-handed guy or the pinch hitter on the bench, you know, he's going to be a left-handed guy and we have to focus on him. The more that you can predict accurately the matchups you're going to see, the more the players will adapt regardless of the inning.
Since you and I last talked, you guys named Scott Harris as your new general manager, president of baseball operations. What's your connection with him?
So I had only met him briefly when he was entering baseball or team baseball with the Chicago Cubs under Theo and Jed. I interviewed for the Cubs, you know, back in 2014 and didn't get the job, and I think he was director of baseball ops, and so I knew him in passing. I didn't know him and not work with him at any other time. The most significant time that I've spent with him has been after he's been hired, and that I was able to sit down with him during the interview process, and Chris Illich was kind enough to keep me involved in the search. But the more that I've gotten to know him, the more inspired that I've been that he's going to be a tremendous leader for our organization. He's a think tank. He's cut out of the same cloth of a lot of the leaders around baseball that I've really admired, and talking about Theo and talking about Andrew Friedman and what Eric Neander does and what Brian Cashman has done for three decades. I mean, he's going to fundamentally change the organization and try to get us back to where the Tiger fans really want us to be in the playoffs. And I, you know, from you know, the way he evaluates things, to the way he interacts with people, to the vision that he has for our organization. We're off to such a great start. We're aligned so much that it revolves around players and winning. And the better that we can enhance the player experience, and the more that we can win games in creative ways, the faster that we'll be back to talking about my decisions in the playoffs and putting the pressure on me to deliver a winning product in October.
All right, AJ. Well, thanks for doing this, and I will talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, as I bring you in, hey, it's Sarah's birthday. What do you think?
Oh, my goodness, Sarah. Happy, happy, happy birthday. October, I say it's the best time of the year. The weather is beautiful, and the fact that it's your birthday elevates the enterprise. So happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, Sarah, what are you going to do today? Celebrate your birthday.
So my mom's in town, which is super exciting. We love Patty. And then my sister just called me, and she's surprising me, and she's coming too. So she'll be flying in tomorrow from Florida.
Wow. Now that's pretty cool that she's making the journey. Your mom made the journey. Were you going to take them any place special? I'm guessing it's the first time you and your mom and your sister have been together since you moved to Bristol.
Yes. So I'm taking them apple picking, to a vineyard. And then my sister is a huge pizza girl. So we're going to go to New Haven for pizza.
Oh, Sarah, it's 9:29 in the morning and I'm already hungry now that you mentioned that. Are you going to a particular place?
So I went to Modern Pizza with my dad and mom when I first moved out here, and that was really delicious. So I'm thinking I'm going to take her there too.
Well, there are several there. Sally's and Frank Pepe qualify as well. So maybe you should go to every one of them because it's your birthday and your family's coming in.
Yeah, good taste test.
There you go. Well, Todd, before we get to this week's quiz, of course, and I see you're doing a victory lap on social media because everyone absolutely loved the fan and franchise. Yes, a lot of kudos to you.
Well, I appreciate hearing from folks, and we've hit the end of the road with it, but it was a fun topic to explore all season long. Absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about at some point about the, I can't remember, it was a Bleacher tweet. Someone asked, are we at some point going to have the Montreal Expos being a phantom franchise? because even though they were there for a long time, they, of course, never really had any kind of success. And we'll always go through history wondering if that 94 team would have gone further.
The what if. The what if.
The what if not for the player strike. I wanted to get from you your response to what happened at Citi Field the other night with Buck Showalter asking the umpires to check on Joe Musgrove. Because the more that I've thought about it, the more people I've talked to, I thought he was in a bad spot, much in the same way. And I was thinking about a conversation I had with John Farrell a few years ago when John Farrell had Michael Pineda, the Yankees, checked because there was a big gob of pine tar on his neck. And I remember talking to John the next day, and John was like, I didn't want to test the guy, but everyone was, was aware on television and watching it on television that he had this stuff on his neck. He said, including my bosses, what was I going to do? And I think Buck, in some way, that was kind of where he was. Musgrove was dominating. His spin rates were up. Our cameras are catching the shiny stuff on his ears, on his face. I don't think he really had a choice, because how's he going to look his bosses in the eye? Because he just doesn't want to have that uncomfortable conversation with the umpire to go ask him to go check Musgrove.
No, I totally agree, Buster. And listen, it's a little bit different than Billy Martin checking the amount of pine tar on George Brett's bat back in the day, right? There's gamesmanship, and then there's, especially given the number of cameras, as you noted, and the added scrutiny in October. I agree. I don't think he had much of a choice. But Buster, what is the story here with hot sauce on the back of one's ears? Or in the case of Roger Clemens, as it came out via Andrew McCutchen's tweet, in other places, perhaps.
Yes, 100%. When I covered Roger, the other players would talk about how before each of his starts, he would shave all the hair off his body, all the hair, and then he would put the heat balm all over his body, because he liked the burning sensation. And that's what Andrew was referring to with his tweet the other day. I've heard that. That's why, after the game, when I was doing my post-game interview with Joe Musgrove, I wish I had 15 seconds with Joe before I asked him the question, because I would have said, tried to give him context. Andrew McCutchen tweeted out that maybe this is hot sauce, just to give him an understanding of what was going on there with that question. His answer actually surprised me, because I thought he was going to say, well, it's hot stuff or it's something else. But when he said, I don't know what it is, there was something there, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it was sweat, but there was clearly something on his ears.
Yeah, no question about it. And of course, this begets the question, Buster. Before a big game, before Sunday Night Baseball, do you do likewise with regard to hot sauce and shaving parts of your body?
Yeah, Roger wore so much of that heat balm, Todd, that players told me they could smell it from the infield positions. Okay, so there's Roger Clemens on the mound, and Chuck Knobloch, Derek Jeter, Scott Brosius, they could also have that antiseptic smell, was like in their face from 50 feet away. How about
that? Wafting through the Bronx. Beautiful.
Exactly. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right. And just to note the standings here, Buster with a solid 13, Sarah and Taylor both with 7. The time has come.
Taylor, people, again, so depressed that he's not joining the podcast to compete. He's the guy who didn't run out of ground ball here.
Well, duty calls, and it's his time to shine here in October. It's a busy time of the year. There's no question about that. So the time has finally come. Which one of these is not an official color for the Seattle Mariners?
Wow.
Is it A, metallic silver? Is it B, red? Is it C, northwest green? or is it D, Puget Sound teal? Not an official color for the Seattle Mariners. Metallic silver, red, Northwest green, or Puget Sound teal?
Yeah, this is the equivalent of Sarah having hot, you know, the hot stuff on her ears. You know, the advantage, competitive advantage, having these color questions. I have an instinct, Sarah, but I'm going to, well, you know what? I'm going to give my answer because you're going to laugh as soon as I give my answer if it's wrong, because you're going to know it's wrong because I have no idea what Todd just said. But it's a language that I don't understand in any form or fashion. I'm going to say the red.
I'm going to say red, too. But
wow,
I just feel like he set us up on this question. He set us up because he was so descriptive with every other color except red. So I'm
red. You're both wrong. Red is an official color. The little stitches in the baseball on the Seattle Mariners logo are red. The incorrect one of these four would be Puget Sound teal. In the Mariners official color scheme, navy blue, metallic silver, red, Pantone 199 to be exact, and Northwest green. So you're both wrong.
Okay. Well, you know what? I can't see color, so I have an excuse. Sarah, what's your excuse?
My excuse is I have none. That was just, you know what?
No, wait a second. Up. Your excuse is it's your birthday and you are anticipating pizza, which throws one off their game.
I think it's kind of rude that they didn't change their colors, so I got the right answer on my birthday.
All right, Todd. Well, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, it's time for Bleacher Tweets. And just a reminder, Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It ain't college football season without the delicious taste of an ice-cold Dr. Pepper. The ones fans deserve. So the first tweet comes from Michael Preston. What do you think was more important for the Yankees tonight in getting that win? Cole working through a rough start to go 6+ innings, or the lineup getting the job done with Judge having a poor night?
Definitely, Michael. Gerrit Cole having a good day, because he needed to have a good day. And if they're going to go, you know, beyond this series into the next round and the round after that, they're going to need Gerrit Cole to lead the way. And so for him to sort of reverse this postseason trend, I think was really important.
Next up is Simon Harrow. If the Phillies eliminate the Braves, do you think it will render the regular season pointless and the new postseason format ridiculous, given Atlanta finished 14 games above the Phillies? Thanks, Simon in Hong Kong. Not a bitter Mets fan, honest.
I mean, that's the nature of the postseason, right? You have the playoffs, and it's not always the best regular season team that wins the World Series. In fact, most of the time, it's not. You know, the last year I was really a fan, 1988, the Dodgers were clearly the fourth best team among the four that started in the playoffs, and they wound up winning the World Series pretty definitively. And then last year, you know, the Braves had the great 2-month finish. They had 88 wins, and then they got really hot in the postseason. They won the World Series. This is just a standard operating procedure. You know, I understand where you're coming from, not being a bitter Mets fan.
Next up is Jeremiah. I'm so sorry if I'm going to butcher your last name. Avice Rouse. Hey, Buster, watching Astros, does the balanced schedule help eliminate home field advantage, a la the Crawford boxes?
Nah, you know, I mean, someone's got to play there, right? They're going to be 81 games in Houston, and the Astros are going to have, their ballpark, much in the same way that the Yankees do, much in the same way that the Orioles do, with that cut in left field that they did this year. That's not going to change. You're still going to be playing ball games in those ballparks.
And our last tweet today comes from PK Steinberg. Within the boundaries of decorum and decency, can you think of any superstition less hygienic than a rally shoe?
Yes, PK. The other day we walked into Citi Field in the broadcast booth, and down on the field was Francisco Lindor, who the previous day had taken early batting practice, and then he'd hit a home run in the regular season game. And so naturally, because it worked one day, he did it the next day. And Eduardo Perez yelled out to him in Spanish, that he wasn't surprised that Lindor was taking BP again. And Lindor said he was keeping everything the same, including his underwear.
Disgusting. Well, that is it for Bleacher Tweets. Be sure to submit your questions using hashtag Bleacher Tweets every week and check us out on YouTube's every Monday.
That's it for today. My thanks to AJ, to Sarah, to Todd, to Taylor, to Sarah, to Bruce Bochy for sending along that audio to Sarah Langs. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.